One good thing about music, when it hits, you feel no pain. One good thing about music, when it hits, you feel no pain. So hit me with music, oh, hit me with music now.
Welcome to Wherever You Are. My name is Ryan McNeil in Toronto, Canada, and you're listening to episode 67 of the Matinee Cast. It's the movie-loving podcast of my movie-loving website, thematinee.ca, your home for cinematic passion and perspective. Well, speaking of Mr. Bolt, back after that gold medal winning run, today's guest took to Twitter and called me the yam and the cassava. And I have no idea what that means either, so maybe he can tell us before this podcast is over. It has been a very long time since this guest has been on the show, a whopping 2 years. But his return is rather serendipitously timed, and we'll get into that in just a moment. We are across a wire to Valsain, Trinidad, where the expatriate from Jamaica has been taking up residence for the last year or so. He is the brains behind GManReviews.com and the host of the Unnamed Movie Podcast. Please welcome back to the show G-Man himself, Andrew Robinson. How are you, sir?
I'm so happy to be back here, and more importantly, to be back here at a time where I can actually call you by your name, sir. Hi, Mr. Ryan Neil.
That is true. I forgot about that. Now you have to explain, what is the yam and the cassava?
Yam and cassava are two grown provisions which are plentiful in Jamaica, and it is what Usain Bolt runs off of and the entire of America keeps claiming is drugs. It is. every Olympics, every time Bolt runs and he jogs across the finish line to set an Olympic, a world record, a gold medal, they all point and say that man must be on drugs, and all they ask is, what is in this yam and cassava? Usain Bolt, thank you so much. You've given us an Olympic record, a world record, 3 gold medals, but Trinidad got 1, and that dude got $1 million, a lighthouse, a house, and I got a day off work. This is completely ass backwards.
Did you get the day off work in Trinidad, by the way?
I did, because Trinidad got 1 gold medal.
Right. Yeah. Oh, for javelin, right?
Yeah.
Well, before we leave the Olympic talk, maybe if we're lucky, or if I'm unlucky, by the time this podcast is over, I will have stepped on the line, and then I will forfeit the Lammy for best podcast to you.
I doubt that will ever happen, sir. But Canada
stepping
did
on the
forfeit
line.
There.
He barely stepped on the line. What's that? You said the Trinidadians were in the stands. They were all the way in the stands. It was done.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, if you want to learn more details about the guest and the recording of episode 67, do check out the Twitter series called Mike and the Mechanics. You'll find those if you search my Twitter feed today being Monday, September 3rd, or by searching #MATM67. Not to delay the beginning of the show any longer, but there are two little housekeeping notes. First of all, I do want to thank anybody who has stopped by the matinee recently or ever, really. The site turned 5 years old. And its predecessor turned 5 years old last week or 2 weeks ago by the time this goes up. And I couldn't have done it without a lot of people, including my guest today, Andrew Robinson, who actually really, really helped me with the launch and the upkeep of the site. So thanks, everybody, for listening to me for even just a moment for the last 5 years. I do appreciate it. The other thing of housekeeping that we have to talk about before I go on is that the Matinee Cast proper is going to be thrown for a little bit of a scheduling loop. The next slot for the show would ordinarily be September 17th, but it will actually return a week later on September 24th. In its stead, get ready for a fast and furious round of shows on the fly. Between September 6th and September 17th, I'll be posting episodes in the series I call Wicked Little Town. Those will document my comings and goings at the Toronto International Film Festival for 2012 and involve a lot of familiar voices along the way, including Andrew Robinson's. Is your visa in order, sir?
Yes, all my documents are in order.
I got 10 bucks, says immigration, pulls you aside. $10 says they don't like the look of you.
They'll just see me. They'll see my passport, and they'll ask me if I have any cassava and yam.
Of course they will. That's what we do. On episode 67, we'll be discussing Premium Rush. We'll be dedicating both listener feedback and a top five to films coming up this fall. But before that, we need to learn a little bit more about Andrew. This is Know Your Enemy. The way back in episode 18, where we discussed Angelina Jolie's Salt, which, you know, you loved, didn't you?
I enjoyed.
We learned the first film that Andrew had seen was The Nightmare Before Christmas. The last film he'd seen at the time was The Long Goodbye. The worst film he'd seen to date was The Man Who Fell to Earth. The classic or essential he had yet to see was Schindler's List. Any luck?
I had promised myself to watch that movie this week, but I did not get to it.
2 years, dude. 2 years. And the films that he wish he had made were Reservoir Dogs in a meritus, point to it and be proud manner, and Predators because he wanted to fix it. So now we get to the back five. Andrew, sir, what's a film that you like that nobody else does?
I find this to be a really tough question. Can I say the FP? I don't know. Actually,
no,
there's a lot of
no,
love for
cannot.
That movie out there.
We've had enough FP discussion for one night.
I think there's enough love out there for that movie. Actually, one movie that I know it has a lot of trouble out there in the cinephile world, but I love to death, happens to be the Wachowski Speed Racer.
Okay.
The movie comes off as one of the most vivid cartoons come to live action that I've ever seen. They tout the use of this flat frame technology, which allows for a lot of interesting shots where things in the background and foreground are kept on pretty much the same focus point, and it allows for a lot of great imagery. I love the cartoony style. I love the comedy. I mean, nothing beats that scene with, I don't remember the child's name right now because it's been a year or so since I've watched this movie, but the child is sitting down with the monkey watching television, to which you realize that the child is wearing pajamas with monkey faces and the monkey is wearing pajamas with children faces. It's kind of hilarious. There's certain touches like that I just love so much in this movie. To me, all I remember things like John Goodman complaining about ninjas. it's silly, and I love it for it.
Yeah, well, okay, it's actually a little strange because when the movie actually came out not long after I started writing. Like, it came out the next summer. And at the time, I actually kind of blamed it for the closing of companies like Warner Independent and Picture House and New Line, because Warner announced that they were closing all of those boutique divisions that released movies I love, like Kinky Boots and Pan's Labyrinth and Good Night and Good Luck. They announced that they were closing those boutique divisions the week after Speed Racer tanked at the box office. Like, it cost something stupid, like $200 million to make, and it opened to about 50 at tops. And they had really, really high hopes for it. But they have a screening series here in Toronto called Defending the Indefensible, and somebody picked Speed Racer. So coming in thinking it's crap and listening to somebody talk about, no, it's not crap, and then actually watching it, it put me into the right mindset. So I'm with you. I do recognize that a lot of people don't like it, and I can see why, but I had a lot of fun when I watched it.
It is definitely the definition of fun. And I mean, some of those race scenes, they're fantastic.
They're awesome. Yeah, oh yeah. No, good call.
And I remember specifically because I think the same year came out Death Race, and all of my friends were talking about Death Race. And I was like, look, if you take Speed Racer racing scenes versus Death Race racing scenes, I don't care how much guns and explosions and blood you put in, Speed Racer wins hands down.
I agree. Conversely, what is a film that everybody else seems to like that you don't?
I know we could start a fight right now, but I'm not going there. I'm going to pick a film which I think at this point, the internet might have forgotten my hate for it, and I should probably rewatch it before calling its name again. But one movie that I have been documented as not loving is Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window.
Whoa.
yeah, I'm bringing it back up so the internet can start hating me again. It just didn't click with me at all. I mean, I think it might have been the first film with Jimmy Stewart that I sat down to watch.
Okay.
And I just didn't know what I was getting into. And it got me to the point where I went down and I said, guys, I prefer Disturbia.
Oh, God. Yeah. You've left me damn near speechless, which is not easy to do.
Are you happy I didn't start a fight today?
I'm thrilled that you didn't start a fight, because I've got no retort to that. Like, when did you see it? How long ago did you see it?
It could be as much as 4 years. I can't remember. Oh, 3 to 4 years.
No, I thought you were gonna say something like 8 or 9 years.
No,
I can't really convince you to rewatch it in that case. 3 or 4 years is not long enough for me to change your mind.
But I have to say that since then, I have purposely gone through a lot of Hitchcock's work.
Okay. And like him now, don't you?
I love his movies. I mean, one of my favorites are Vertigo, which just hit the number one on the Sight and Sound list. Even though I have to say, my personal number one Hitchcock that I've seen is Notorious. And I don't know if you've gotten around to that one yet.
I have. I love it. I love it. In that case, I would say then do come back to Rear Window. You'll know within like 30 minutes. If it hasn't gripped you by the opening 30 minutes, then you'll know that it's there's no point in keeping on going. I think the time is right for you to revisit it. I retract my earlier statement. I do think that you need to go back to it. In other news, what is the last film or a recent film to make you cry?
Oh, this is kind of a tough one. I can't really remember, so I'm just going to go with my standard, the movie that makes me cry. And that has to be Darren Aronofsky's The Fountain.
Really?
sincerely, when it comes to that climactic scene, I pretty much break down every time.
Huh.
And I watch that movie every year. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. It might have been the first movie, I think, that I watched where I immediately went, how the hell have I not seen this movie yet? It is the greatest thing I've ever seen put to film. The moment where you see the ring,
yeah,
it's just glorious.
yeah, that is true. I don't know why that film didn't move me. I sound like a cold, heartless bastard at this point. But what I will say about that movie is it's a film that the first time I watched it in a theater, no less, I thought it was handsome and I thought it was interesting, but I didn't really latch on to it. And then when we bought our Blu-ray player Christmas before last, I was trying to think of movies I should get. And for some reason, that one jumped to mind of, oh, yeah, The Fountain. I remember that one looking really, really handsome. I should go get that one. And I think like it sells now for something stupid like $6. It's a really, really stupidly cheap Blu-ray. And I rewatched it. And I was like, this movie's awesome. How the hell did I forget about this?
And on a side note, for people who listen to my podcast, my best friend, who is my co-host, Damien, we have a certain history with this film. It's one of those films we agree highly on, and it's one of the films which kind of taught us how much we loved about movies.
Do you get together and cry together?
No, we have not had that moment. However, there was one afternoon where he was just hanging out in my house, and he saw The Fountain DVD on the shelf, and he's like, let's watch this. And he popped it in, and we're watching it. And when it comes to that end moment, as he puts it, I've ruined the movie for him, because while he's always heard people say to him, look, Damien, the movie's about a man who flies a tree into space, and that made him laugh. When it comes to that end moment and he's putting on the ring, I whisper to him, one ring to rule them all, and he just breaks down, and no, he cannot take that out of his mind anytime he watches the movie.
That's awesome. That is awesome. In the movie of your life, who plays you?
Kind of tough, but I think I'm gonna be slightly honest. I'm not gonna be one of those guys to say, guess what, I want Steve McQueen to be me because he's the epitome of all. No, I'm going to pick funny man Jason Segel.
Oh, okay.
he's tall, he's witty, he's fun. He I feel like he could play me, you know?
Can you rock a pair of Uggs?
Probably not, but he'll do that for me. That'll be the rewrites.
Okay, I think I'd like to see that, actually. And finally, what are you watching next?
That's a tough question because honestly, and this is kind of why things like 2 years have passed and I haven't seen Schindler's List. I barely ever plan what I'm going to watch.
You have a podcast.
Well, I mean, other than that, where I say, okay, I need to watch a movie for Friday so I can record and talk about that. But the next movie on my that I think I'm more likely to watch again is The Seventh Seal because I just got that on Criterion Blu-ray.
Guess what? I have never seen that.
You have never. You need to see that.
I know. I need to see that. That's probably going to be on the blind spot list for next year if I do that experiment again. But no, I it's one that I've been meaning to see forever. I am woefully blind where Bergman is concerned. So I think I'm gonna have to like mainline a lot of his essentials in the early part of next year.
All I've seen from him is, I believe, The Seventh Seal, which I love, and Persona, which I'm not that big a fan of.
Nope, neither. I haven't seen either one. Wild Strawberries, nope. I think I'm losing all my Swedish listeners as I say this, both of them. I know I feel very ashamed, so there you go. Maybe you've inspired me. I don't think I've got time in the next few days to get it in just because the clock is ticking very loudly between now and TIFF, but I will make a point of digging into some Bergman before too very long. As I said, if I get to January and I haven't done it by then, I will make it like a New Year's resolution.
Definitely, so, sir.
All right, that's more about Andrew, and it's time to learn a little bit more about you. It's your chance to come talk to me right after this. Why are you shaking like a leaf? Come on, come talk to me. Please talk to me. Summer's over. As you may or may not have noticed, if you're a student, you are back in school. If you have children, they are back in school, and if neither applies to you, step outside. Is it colder? Yes, summer's over.
And or as Damien calls it, the true Father's Day, as they're all paying school fees.
Awesome. But the good news, even though summer's over, is that with fall coming comes good movies. And I asked people last time, what are they looking forward to in the fall and the winter too? Some people mentioned movies in December, which I count. Basically anything before the turn of the calendar. And I got a cool, I got a few different answers. Jessica from the Velvet Cafe, speaking of Sweden, said the movie she's looking forward to the most is The Hobbit, even though I'm doing it with a little bit of dread since the reactions to the new double amount of frames technology were so cold when they showed it to the press. She's talking about the 48 frames per second that Peter Jackson used to film it. It just doesn't sound appealing. Besides, I wish they didn't go for the 3D. It worked so well without it in the Lord of the Rings movies, and there's really no need to go down that road, taking the risk that it will look like crap. But for all those reservations, I still look forward to it very much. I'm such a Tolkien geek at heart and love Jackson's adaptation so far. You know, yesterday I went and saw Paranorman, and I went and saw it in 3D, and they had a 3D trailer for The Hobbit beforehand. I don't think I'm going to go 3D on this one.
Really?
No. Even though I know Jackson shot it in 3D, and that's usually the backbreaker for me. If the director intends it and it's usually more of an auteur than a hired gun, I don't know, there's something, it doesn't feel right seeing that in 3D.
Well, I mean, first of all, I have always had a disposition towards live action 3D.
Okay.
And I'm also willing to put it out there that I am not ready to put Peter Jackson under the auteur category. He has done wonderfully with the Lord of the Rings films, and I'm looking forward to The Hobbit. I'll probably see it in 3D, but not on that list for me. He I feel like he's not there. One thing I find really interesting to deal with the 48 frames per second, I was talking to a friend at work about the whole thing because he's very video technology intertwined, and he was so excited for the idea of it, and he was wondering about all of that negative backlash on the screening of The Hobbit in 48 frames per second. And when I broke it down for him was, look, when they're talking about all of that backlash, they're not talking about the technology being bad. The thing about when you're talking to movie critics is they're not talking about technology unless it helps the experience of watching the movie.
Correct.
When you push up the 48 frames per second, when you push up that brightness on the 3D, it makes images so vivid that it can push it to a point where the unbelievable becomes ridiculously unbelievable, and it takes you out of the movie watching experience. And that's what they're complaining about more than the technology doesn't look promising.
I almost fear that I'm gonna have to see it twice. I'm gonna have to see it in 48 and 24 to do an actual comparison, and see, like, for myself the actual difference between the two. So I think, as much as I don't like paying for a movie two times, unless I screen jump or something, I might have to see The Hobbit twice just to actually get a comparison.
You're lucky to have that option, sir.
Well, there's that. A few of my listeners said that they are looking forward to Looper. Kristen Griffin, who is my guest on episode 66, she said Looper. She also said Argo is very high on her list. Sebastian Gutierrez, to no surprise, said Looper, Looper, 1,000 times Looper. Jess Rogers from Real Insight said Les Mis. She said it might change, but at the moment, Les Miserables, that's the Tom Hooper adaptation of the popular Cameron Mackintosh musical. You know what? I'm on the fence about Les Mis. It's possible that it might be amazing. It's got a very high possibility to suck.
Les Mis, I mean, I'm a musical fan. I'll watch it just for that, and then I'll be happy because I got to see Russell Crowe. And actually, to tell the truth, I've never seen any version of Les Mis. I only know the big famous song from it, which is in this teaser.
Okay. I have seen the stage version, partly because I... you know, grew up around people who loved musicals, and second, I certainly married one, so it was impossible for me not to. I think it's entirely possible that it's going to be great. It's also entirely possible that it's going to completely miss. My rationale for this is, I tell people, go back and look at the trailer for Nine, go back and look at the trailer for Phantom of the Opera. They looked really good, and then we saw them, and they didn't. So it's real easy to make a trailer for a musical. I think it's kind of tricky to actually pull one off in a motion picture format, but we'll see. A few people mentioned The Master, which we're going to talk about later. Andrew Buckle from the Film Emporium, it comes out November 8th in Australia. Anna, who's she's on Twitter as MovieNut14, her site is now called Cookie Full of Arsenic. How awesome a site name is that?
Wow. I'm guessing she's going for the Cary Grant reference right there.
Yeah. She also mentioned The Master. Rich Watson from Widescreen World, he said The Master and also Life of Pi. And then there were a couple more miscellaneous answers. Stevie Taylor, who recently celebrated a birthday, she said The Perks of Being a Wallflower, but she's not sure when it comes out in New Zealand. That's the new one with Emma Watson from the Harry Potter films. My friend Matthew Brown said Skyfall, the new James Bond movie, and how badass does that trailer look?
Sam Mendes making a James Bond action
movie.
I'm sold.
I don't even need a trailer. I'm in. Nikath from India said, going by the American release dates, Seven Psychopaths. She's not entirely sure when or if it will release in India. Sam McCosh from Australia said Killing Them Softly, followed closely by Skyfall and The Master. We'll talk a little bit about Killing Them Softly later. Sean Kelly, SK on Films, said, oh, he's got a list. Looper, Dread, The Master, Taken 2. How does somebody get Taken again?
What I find hysterical about that trailer is that it looks really bad.
Of course. I haven't actually seen Taken. One of these days... Isn't there? There's a Liam Neeson badass trilogy now, right? It's Taken, The Gray, and what's the third one? There's another one.
The A-Team? I don't know. Is that what you're thinking of?
There's another one. There's another one where he does that kind of guy, I thought. I could be wrong.
I can't remember.
Sean also mentions Frankenweenie, Seven Psychopaths, Wreck-It Ralph, and Skyfall. Four of those films will be playing at TIFF, though I'll probably just wait for the regular release for all but one. And he mentions Dread. I guess he's going to go after Dread at TIFF. My friend Leora said Seven Psychopaths because a whole bunch of Toronto folk got to see it early and gushed all over it. She's also going to say Pitch Perfect. Okay. Holy Motors, which I've heard a lot of good things about, but I actually don't know a damn thing about. To the Wonder, Much Ado About Nothing, and The Master as well. Finally, a new listener who has been nothing but enthusiastic about the show. He goes by the handle The Vern. His site is The Video Vanguard. He says, Looper, The Master, Frankenweenie, Seven Psychopaths, VHS, which nobody else has mentioned. That's kind of a thriller, if I understand it correct. Cloud Atlas, Wreck-It Ralph, The Man with the Iron Fists. What the hell is that?
That is the new Kung Fu Amazingness directed by the RZA.
Okay.
Okay. With, and before you get over it, Russell Crowe is in that movie.
Done. I'm there. I am so there. Thank you. Thank you, Vern, for bringing this to my attention. He also mentions Les Miserables and Django Unchained. Well, we will talk a little bit more about films that we're looking forward to later on, but we need to get to the new slang, Premium Rush, right after this. Premium Rush is directed by David Koepp. It is written by Koepp along with John Camps. It stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Michael Shannon, Dania Ramirez, and Jamie Chung. Gordon-Levitt plays a bike courier named Wiley, and one afternoon he picks up a package from an old friend that's played by Jamie Chung and is told that he needs to deliver it across Manhattan by 7 o'clock that night. Well, he doesn't get more than a few steps away when he's stopped by Michael Shannon, who says, I need what's in your bag. And like a good courier, Joseph Gordon-Levitt does not want to give it up. And a chase ensues where he's got to zip his way through New York on his trusty bicycle. Mr. Robinson, I'm almost afraid to ask because you threatened me on Twitter with what I was asking of you for this show. But what did you think of Premium Rush?
Look at these thighs, man. Look at these thighs. This is what I consider to be a special film. A film which feels like it wanted to be made in the 90s, back when BMX Bandits and Quicksilver was in high regard, as well as our fan favorite of Airborne. I know you're a big fan of that, Mr. McNeil.
Oh, yeah.
The movie, it has itself simple enough, but at the same time, it never really gives itself a chance to talk about characters. And I'm not saying every movie needs that, but this movie, it feels almost like someone who was writing this was thought they were being clever, but in truth and in fact they weren't. They make a lot of references to the fact that Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character is Wiley, and they go further to say, oh, like the coyote.
Right.
So now you're thinking Wiley Coyote and the Roadrunner, and it doesn't play off. I watch this movie and I weep. I weep for the children of this world who have to go and watch something like this. I mean,
this is going to be fun because you know what? I liked this movie. It is not, of course, my kind of thing. I'm known as the serious drama guy. I'm the guy who's going to see like Beasts of the Southern Wild and that kind of thing this time of year. But I had a lot of fun with it. I liked Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it. And a lot of the situations that he gets himself into and out of. And thought that for the most part, it stays on point. It every once in a while, it kind of strays and gets into some kind of heavy-handed things with immigration and with crime and with a Chinese crime syndicate, but by and large,
with a smiley face,
as all crime syndicates work, you know. But no, I really enjoyed this movie.
So you're telling me you enjoyed a movie which, number one, felt like it was really, really sad that Wesley Snipes wasn't available to rerun his role as Simon from Demolition Man, except as a bike messenger. Number two, basically gave me traffic foo as you watch Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who is continually referencing the fact that he doesn't like having brakes on his bike. He refuses to stop or gears. What's the line he keeps saying? No brakes, no gears, Don't want to, yeah. And every time you see him come up to like a traffic intersection where he would be running a red light, you see the movie slow down. And he basically runs through each scenario as to which way he should go so that he doesn't die.
Yeah, he's got bike vision. He's got like a spidey sense.
Where, yeah, it's traffic foo.
Yes, he's doing all kinds of things. He's running up on the median sometimes. He's jumping if he needs to. He's ducking if he needs to. There's a point where they have to slip under a flatbed truck, which I think I like pumped my fist when that one came through. I was like, yeah, it's a good move. Traffic foo. And then he's got this Matrix shit that happens anytime he's approaching a critical situation where he can see his way through it. He can see variables of how he can go through it and the outcome of every variable. And I thought that was awesome, actually.
I don't know. It felt overdone. It felt almost like in the first Sherlock Holmes when they were talking about the how Sherlock plans out his fights. It's exactly like that. But at the same time, when you see it 2-3 times in the movie, it kind of wears on you. It wasn't particularly fun the first time for me. And when it came to the fourth time, I was like, really, can we just skip to him living or dying, please?
The only thing, you know what? Okay, I'll grant you this. The only thing I didn't need was it starts every moment he's got the spidey sense going. It starts with like a dotted line that shows his route. Like his plan of attack. I didn't need the dotted line. Just show me him going in, and then what's going to happen.
The only other point in this movie which felt any form of they were really trying to highlight was the moment where Wiley starts doing tricks.
When he's trying to get when he's getting the bike out of impound.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they try as hard as possible to make him seem even more awesome than he supposedly already is. And I guess I just wasn't buying into the movie then. It was already, what, an hour in at that point?
Yeah.
And it was just adding on stuff that I was like, oh, you thought you're smart. That's fun.
What did you think of the movie? The movie pretty much plays out in real time. What did you think of that? Or did you notice?
I noticed. I thought it was okay. I thought it was kind of a cheat when it started to flash back to try and give us these backstories as to why Michael Shannon.
The thing is, though, when we come back 10 minutes later. Like, if it shows us a 10-minute scene, it's not that it stops the clock. It comes back 10 minutes after it left us.
Oh, actually, I didn't even notice that, to be honest.
No, it's from the, like, we start at 5:30, and by the time we catch up to the moment that, like, we kind of get dropped into the middle of it. By the time we get caught up to the scene that we saw in the opening credits, 90 minutes has gone by.
I did not even notice that, to be honest.
See, that was one of the things I liked about it. There we go. See, now we've talked a lot about Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I think the other thing that made this movie for me that I did enjoy quite a bit, a person who will get me into pretty much any movie he does now, Michael Shannon is having a whole lot of fun in this movie.
Yeah, his laugh is kind of scary.
Yeah, and the look on his face, like, he's got crazy eyes. And it's kind of a permanent expression.
He's made money off of crazy eyes his entire career.
Yes,
he has. What was the first movie you remember him in?
Revolutionary Road.
Right. That's probably the first one I noticed him in. But funny enough, a while back, I revisited Groundhog Day and spotted him in that movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's one of the... he's like the newlyweds, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the first time you see them, they're fighting, and he has such crazy eyes in that moment.
I think he's in, if I remember correct, he's in Tigerland as well.
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, that's so... He's pretty good in it, but the movie itself is just awesome. Even without him being a huge part of it. Like, he's one of those guys. It's kind of funny because this last episode of Real Insight with Jess and Rachel, they asked if there are actors who will specifically get you into a movie. And he's one of them for me. Like, almost out of nowhere. Like, Revolutionary Road was just 3 years ago. More or less after... Like, since... Take Shelter. Since Take Shelter last year, I have decided if he is in a movie, I am seeing it.
And pretty much.
Yeah, and it makes me really, really excited, actually, for Superman, because he's going to be General Zod.
It makes me really, really excited for the Iceman, because that's all I'm thinking about now.
Yeah, yeah, see, and that's the thing. I was looking through the TIFF book. I knew nothing about this movie called The Iceman. I didn't even read the synopsis. I just saw, oh, there's a picture. It's got Michael Shannon in it. I want to see this movie.
With a 70s mustache.
With a 70s mustache, that's right. But, you know, he's really great in this movie. He has some awesome scenes in these little seedy Chinatown gambling establishments. He plays really, really well off of Jamie Chung. He's got these... Like, basically everybody he plays off of, including Joseph Gordon-Levitt, he makes it worthwhile. I will be honest. As I said, there are some very silly elements to this film. The Spidey sense was the one thing. The other thing I thought was a little bit strange was the Google Maps. Did you notice?
Yeah, his use of Google Maps and then clicking alternate route 5 times to try and figure out which one you should take.
I'm like, you're a courier. Shouldn't you know this shit?
Well, I mean, I'd imagine in a town as big as New York, you'd get asked to go to some strange places every once in a while. And when he's given a package to go into some back alley in Chinatown, he might need a little confirmation.
He does. The thing is, that's fine. The movie doesn't need to pull all the way back and show us the route.
Well, I mean, I haven't been to New York. Actually, I have, but I've never really been in there properly. So maybe okay. I want to know, you know?
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, it's maybe selling that's... me New York. Okay. It's selling me New York.
I see. He's showing you just how big an island Manhattan is.
Yeah.
Right. For me, that was one of the things because the movie likes having a lot of fun with graphics, like along with the fact of showing the route when he's doing the traffic foo, and then you got the Google Maps, and you also have the little ticking clock that moves up and moves back every once in a while. It was like one graphic too many for me.
But to be honest, I think at the end of the day, the number one thing which annoyed me the most with this movie had to be Manny. And if you dare tell me you enjoyed him,
No, Manny's an idiot. Manny, for people who are listening and have not seen it, just to make things a little bit more complicated, so the main two couriers that we meet are Wiley, that's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Vanessa, played by Dania Ramirez. Her and Wiley are interested in each other, but somewhat on the outs. And then over on the side, you've got this spandex-wearing, carbon-fiber bike-riding, protein-paste-eating guy named Manny, who, along with wanting to prove that he's a better courier/cyclist than Wiley, he also wants to steal Vanessa out from under him and goes about it in whatever means necessary. Now, you're right. He was idiotic. I did not need him at all. And that was one of the things that held the movie back for me.
It could have worked if Wesley Snipes was actually doing it, but honestly... No.
He's pretty much useless. Although, when you know, here's the thing, and the thing that I'll kind of end on here. Any time that Vanessa, Manny, or Wiley are riding their bikes at top speed, boy, do they make it look fun. You know, it is what they are doing is dangerous as hell, but boy, does it ever look fun.
Doesn't it make you miss having a bike? Still have a bike, Ryan?
It does. I thought to myself, I was like, I should go to my parents' place and get out my bike. And then I realized it's going to turn colder here in 2 weeks, and that's pointless. But next spring, I am getting my bike.
Okay.
You know, I could always just go use a stationary bike, but that's not
so. Fun. So I recommend for you now, Ryan, at this point, after enjoying Bike Messenger 3.0, to go and watch Torque.
Oh, yeah.
Because that movie has the greatest bike fight scene in the world.
Done and done. Well, as bad a time as you had with Premium Rush, you do get to take a souvenir. So if you had to keep one thing from Traffic Foo, what would be your souvenir?
I'm gonna have to go with Raj. He did his bit. I mean, when he pulled out the hammer to open the bear, I'm like, yes, sir, you win.
that is true. Asif Manvi is pretty awesome in this movie. Okay, for me, my souvenir is Michael Shannon. Like I said, he's a lot of fun in this movie. He's completely off the hook. He goes full Shannon. I'm using Shannon as an adjective now, the same way I would say somebody goes full Malkovich. He goes full Shannon in this movie. And
I didn't think about that, but Malkovich and Shannon, they do kind of work together.
They do. They do. I'm telling you, it's great. I'm almost afraid to ask, but on a scale of 1 to 4 stars, what Andrew Robinson do you give Premium Rush Traffic
Court? I guess I'll give it a 1 because it actually existed.
Oh my God. Really? You did? You liked this less than Salt?
Yes.
Boy, oh boy. Okay. Well, at the risk of getting...
I can watch Salt again, no? That'd be nice.
Lies. At the risk of getting yelled at across a wire here, I'm giving it a 3. I had a lot of fun with this movie.
No, I know you did.
Okay. That's good. All right. Yeah, 3 out of 4 from me, 1 out of 4 from Andrew. You'll either like it or you'll hate it, and I think it's a lot of fun is the whole point. But
I think Corey's got this whole thing right. Ryan is wrong. That's a nice
stop
trend.
It. No, do not encourage Corey and Tad. I will not have that. Maybe we're both wrong. Let us know. Ryan@thematinee.ca, Twitter, Facebook. Give me your thoughts on Premium Rush if you saw it. And we'll be right back after this with our top 5, the best of you. Is someone getting the best, the best, the best, the best of you? Is someone getting the best, the best, the best, the best of you? We're back in the feedback section. We heard about the films that you folks are looking forward to. Andrew and I are looking forward to a few that you mentioned and a few that you didn't. So we're going to go through those kind of quickly and maybe give you some tips of some movies to look out for this coming fall. They're not really in order. They're kind of sort of in order, but not really. We both have one that we're looking forward to more than any other. So we'll go over those at the end. But before that, we're going to just kind of go through 4 others. So Andrew, once you get us started, what is the first movie that you're really looking forward to in fall 2012?
I guess the first movie I should really mention is one that one of your listeners brought up. I was about to say viewers, but I'm like, they can't see us.
That's a good thing. Well, at least in my perspective.
It's the newest film with Brad Pitt, Killing Them Softly. And I didn't know what really to think of it. I knew a lot of people were touting it earlier in the year, saying it's going to be one of the best movies because I think it's based on a book. Am I wrong?
I do not know.
Or the script was on the blacklist last year. I don't remember. But people were all talking about it. And then the trailer came out recently. And between having a Johnny Cash song, it has one of the most chilling scenes I can expect from a movie. In the trailer, you see a moment where Brad Pitt meets with one of the people who he's been hired to kill, and it becomes plainly obvious that this is the moment where Brad Pitt lets this man know that this is what he's here for. And it just seems like the moment is going to be so good. It's going to be so palpable. I'm going to love it.
You know what's kind of funny, actually, is I know precious, precious little about this movie, and that is by design, because it was one of those things where I learned Brad Pitt is teaming up with the director who did The Assassination of Jesse James again. I was a really, really big fan of The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. So as soon as I found out that same actor, same director, new movie, gritty crime drama again, I'm like, I'm in. I haven't actually seen the trailer, believe it or not. I don't know a damn thing about the story. I'm on board. And when this thing comes out, it was kind of funny because when Sam McCosh sent me that message and when you put it in your 5 that you sent me before we went on air, I actually couldn't remember what the hell it was called. I was like, what the hell is this movie? And when I looked it up, I was like, oh, right, it's that one. And that's the thing I enjoy is I've always said, if you know that you like directors and you certainly know that you like them when they pair with certain actors, just shut it all down. Just don't look at trailers. Don't read synopsis. Just go.
I'm sorry. I'm a junkie. Okay. I enjoy them.
And like, power to you. I'm not going to dissuade you, but it's that's my thing. And I was a little bit bummed that it didn't end up making the program for TIFF, but it gives us something to look forward to. That is coming out in North America. That's coming out in mid October. October 19th is the release date for that. So, I'm with you. That one looks awesome, for sure. I was actually kind of grumpy that you took that from me. My first one is one that I've strangely heard a lot about, and I'll explain in a minute. My first one is the next film from the director of In Bruges, and it once again stars Colin Farrell. It's called Seven Psychopaths. Colin Farrell is in it, is teaming up with the director Martin McDonagh again. He plays a Hollywood screenwriter, and he's trying to write a movie about psychopaths, and For inspiration, he goes out to meet actual psychopaths. And get this for a cast list: Woody Harrelson, Sam Rockwell, Christopher Walken, Tom Waits. I can never pronounce his name. Is it Zeko Ivanik? Is that the guy?
I'll take your word for it.
Okay. Abby Cornish is also in this movie. So is Olga Kurylenko. She was in the last James Bond movie. This movie's going to be amazing. The word that I got, it was kind of funny. It played in just like an actual like test screening here in Toronto. And somehow a whole bunch of the locals got to go, even though expressly on the email, it said, if you run a movie site, like if you blog or anything of the sort, you cannot come. Bunch of liars, whole bunch of liars locally just went and soaked up this movie.
Ryan, it just shows what character you have.
What's that?
That you weren't one of the liars.
No,
from one of the liars.
I also have a day job.
I know about this movie.
That was the defining line. This happened at like 11 o'clock on a Tuesday. So when I saw this, I was like, I'm at work. But meanwhile, a whole bunch of the locals, they don't have, you know, jobs. So they all went. Yeah, they all came out just raving about this movie. And if you have not seen In Bruges, for the love of God, go see it. And again, kind of like Killing Them Softly, the idea of a director and an actor teaming up again fills me with nothing but joy. So Seven Psychopaths is one that I am very, very much looking forward to this fall. In North America, it will be coming out October 12th. What's another film that you're looking forward to seeing this fall?
I'm looking forward to seeing Life of Pi, the newest film from director Ang Lee. Ever since, I think it's 2009 or is it 2010, Avatar was released. That was 2009.
Yeah.
The entire of Hollywood has gone crazy over 3D films. And I went the gamut from, oh, it looks amazing, to, oh, I can't stand seeing the conversions, to people are just making money to make money's sake. And it wasn't until early this year that I finally got the chance to see Martin Scorsese's Hugo, to which I was finally reminded that with the right director at hand, any technology can come off as fantastic in a movie. And that's why I'm looking forward to The Life of Pi. Ang Lee is a director who, while he has his bad films, I feel he has a lot more great films. And I just recently completed watching his entire filmography, and I'm looking forward to see what another great filmmaker can do with 3D.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've said before, I don't go for the trailers as much online. Once in a while, I will. I tend to see them more when I go to the theater. And yesterday, I got to see the trailer for this again before Paranorman, and in all its 3D glory. And I was really, really taken by how glorious this film looks. Have you read the book?
I have not.
Okay, I have, and I'm actually count myself a very big fan of the book. I'm going to read it again in the months that we have between now and the film coming out. But I'm with you. I think that's the thing. Any filmmaking tool in the hands of a master, and Ang Lee is a master. As much as he's released films that I wasn't crazy about, like Lust, Caution, and Hulk, and I wasn't completely sold on Taking Woodstock, but that film still has its charm. I'm a big fan of what he does in movies like Ice Storm and Brokeback Mountain and, of course, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. So I'm very much looking forward, A, to seeing what he can do with a film that's this visually lush, and B, certainly what he can do with 3D.
I love Lost Caution.
Do you really?
Yes, I do.
I wanted a little bit more lust and a little bit less caution.
I have it on DVD. I think I've only watched it once, though. I should say that.
Okay. Yeah. So have I. So maybe I just need to give it another look. I did see it very early in the morning, and I was very tired. So it's possible that I just did not soak it up properly.
Yeah, being tired on foreign films is not a good mix.
No, it is not. So Life of Pi, for everybody, it comes out November 21st. I believe it is counter-programming to Twilight. So go see it. Because Lord knows, I don't think anybody should go see Twilight. My next one, we kind of mentioned earlier, and it sort of goes without saying, so we won't talk about it for too very long, but there is a new James Bond film this fall, finally. It has been four very long years since Quantum of Solace, and it is called Skyfall. Daniel Craig, of course, is back. Sam Mendes is directing. The big bad in this movie is played by Javier Bardem. What more could you possibly want? And I have seen this trailer, and while I usually purport people just go in blind and not look at the trailers, you must watch this trailer because it just looks absolutely epic. In case I haven't sold it well enough, it's a very, very high on my list for sure.
So let's get this straight. This year, James Bond will defeat Javier Bardem. He will save England, and he's already had sex with the Queen this year.
Yeah, big year.
You know? Big year for James Bond.
Yeah. Oh, and just to kind of brag a little bit, to get us all in the mood, the Lightbox here in Toronto will be doing a James Bond retrospective.
I don't hate you.
Oh, come on. I know you want to go watch Moonraker on a big screen.
I'm not going to go there. I'm going to be a good person. I'm going to be a good person today.
All right. Well,
I've already gotten the jabs I wanted, and I've already gotten my most important jab, and that starts with an F and ends with a P.
I see. we both have a common title on our list, so we'll go to that one next. It's the one that stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So why don't you tell people about that? We'll talk about that one together.
So there was a man. He brought out a film called Brick. Then he brought out a better film called The Brothers Bloom.
Which a lot of people haven't seen.
Those people don't talk to me anymore. We've come to an understanding.
I see.
And he's bringing out a new film in which he pretty much makes his own version of Terminator, as far as I've understood it, via his AMA on Reddit. There's Looper by Rian Johnson, and that's my number one gripe with TIFF coming up. I'm not going to get to see it at TIFF, and I hope it'll be out here sometime next month.
It's scheduled in North America for the end of the month. It's scheduled for September 28th, and like you, I was kind of surprised that TIFF didn't schedule a public screening. They're both galas. The cool thing about this, okay, first of all, along with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you've also got Bruce Willis in the cast, who he can bring some good things when he wants to, and Emily Blunt, who is another actor who I'll almost always go see what she's in, because I really, really like what she's been doing with her career. She's been choosing some good parts. She's found some great chemistry with the actors that she works off of, so I'm curious to see what she can do. And like you said, Rian Johnson, I love both of his films. I love what he's done on Breaking Bad. If people are a fan of that show, he's directed several episodes of that show, and I think that he's done some awesome stuff there. And the whole premise, it kind of looks like, along with looking like Terminator, it actually looks like Time Crimes, too.
Time crimes. Have I seen Time Crimes?
Have you
I
don't not think seen I've time seen Time crimes? Crimes.
I don't think I've seen
oh,
Time
you,
Crimes.
You might be going home with a copy of Time Crimes. I'm not even gonna like ask for you to like lend it back to me. I'll just buy you a copy. It is great. It is a great thing, and certainly it'll either get you in the mood for Looper, or it'll just make a great double feature after you see Looper. And anybody listening, if you have not seen Time Crimes, do check it out. It's a discovery that somebody, a past guest, told me about on this very show, and I'm very, very happy to have seen it.
I'm sorry. I've totally seen Time Crimes. I was thinking of a different movie.
What were you thinking of?
I was thinking of some, like, more Terminator-looking film, which was about a guy jumping through time and having to go into different time periods and solve crimes. I don't know why.
Not Time Cop.
Time Cop was what I was thinking of. My apologies.
Oh, my Lord.
My brain just had a moment.
Yeah, a moment. let's move on. Looper's awesome. Go see it. It's out on September 28th. You're still up. So what is your other film that is not your number one overall choice?
This is not my number one overall by choice, and that's only by the slimmest of bias margins. Because there's a lot of bias into why I need to watch this film, and it is the latest opus from Paul Thomas Anderson, and this is The Master. Not many people know this. Actually, I'm pretty sure many people know this. Anyone who's reading my stuff or listening to my podcast, one of my favorite movies of all time is Magnolia. It's what, and it falls under the definition of what me and my friends consider to be a great movie, and it's when you press play. And when it's over, the sun is gone, and magically you don't know what happened with your time. You're just so happy. You're so happy that you spent the time with this movie. And this movie is 3 hours long. And I don't care what he decides to talk about. I will watch anything Paul Thomas Anderson makes. Actually, to tell you the truth, I think there's still one of his films I haven't seen. I haven't seen Hard Eight.
I also have not seen Hard Eight. I did start it one day. Like, I do remember renting it. On video, of all things. That shows you how long ago I rented it on VHS. And I remember watching the opening 15 minutes, which seemed cool. It wasn't like I didn't enjoy it. I think I just got busy and I never came back to it. And then, of course, you know, you had to return videos to the shop. So I think that's going to be kind of my mission is between now and The Master. I think I do finally need to watch Hard Eight. But I'm with you. I know there are people out there. Friends of the show, even, who aren't crazy about Paul Thomas Anderson as a director. I, on the other hand, am in for anything he does. If I have a qualm with the man, it's I wish he worked faster. He's suddenly dropped into this rhythm of releasing films every 5 years. So, you know, we had Punch Drunk Love in 2002, then we had There Will Be Blood in 2007, now it's another 5 years and we've got The Master. Dude, speed the hell up. I love
I don't rush Terrence Malick any more than I rush Paul Thomas Anderson, as long as they make their movies awesome.
No. I don't want them to be off in the shed in Montana editing things one frame at a time. I want them to work a little bit quicker because I need more of it.
Do you want these guys to become M. Night Shyamalan? No, stop it. Enjoy what you get and have fun.
Fair enough. Well, the other good news, by the way, is The Master has been pushed up in terms of release date. It is given a limited release date in North America of September 17th. You might want to take that with a grain of salt, but certainly by September 24th and September 30th, you should see it rolling out into a city near you. One other thing on The Master, if you're in a larger city and you have the chance, it was actually filmed in 70mm, and a handful of theaters around the world will be showing the 70mm print of it. So do check that out, because it is a glorious thing to see the 70mm print. And it's cool that somebody else is still working in that. So, you know, there's that. My next one, my runner-up choice for the film I'm most excited about this fall. We were talking about trailers quite a bit today. It actually has a very unfortunate trailer, because I think that it does a bad job of selling the movie. If I didn't know more than I know, I probably wouldn't be wanting to see it so badly. But it is Zero Dark Thirty, the new film from Kathryn Bigelow about the... but the hunt and the mission to capture Osama bin, well, kill Osama bin Laden. I am a huge, huge fan of The Hurt Locker. And here's another director where it's been 3 long years, and I've been waiting for more material. So I was happy to see Kathryn Bigelow come back with something this charged. It's written by Mark Boal again. He's the guy who wrote The Hurt Locker. And here's another one with a great cast, because Jessica Chastain is in it, and Joel Edgerton and Mark Strong is in this movie. Chris Pratt, who he can do some cool dramatic things. We saw him do some interesting things in Moneyball. Kyle Chandler as well, who we saw last in Super 8. I think this is going to be something very, very cool and very, very charged. It's the fallout of the Oscar bet, so I have twisted my blushing bride's arm into going to see this, even though I know it is not her kind of thing, but I think that very good things are going to come of this movie. Did you have any thoughts on Zero Dark Thirty at all?
I should really let that movie sit on its own, because the thing to do with that film is the trailer for that came out the same week as the episode of The Newsroom. Are you watching The Newsroom right now?
I am not.
You are not. Well, it was the episode of The Newsroom which handled the news of the death of Osama bin Laden. And I just, due to the back, my feelings on that episode and how it handled that news, I was almost ready to lash out at this trailer because of how I expect for this movie to handle the topic of the hunt for Osama bin Laden, as to wondering whether America really should be lauding this effort, this moment in history, in this manner. But I don't know, to be honest. I don't know anything about the movie. I just know Kathryn Bigelow directed it. She did The Hurt Locker. She also did Near Dark, which I hope, dear God, you don't like.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it? That's the best answer you could give me.
Okay.
the movie could turn out to be good. I just some of these stories, I kind of wish they decided to just not tell me and just put a fake name under what it was really about.
Yeah, that is true. I will admit, as jacked as I am to see this movie, my concern is this too soon? You know, we just come out of a decade where a lot of films about Afghanistan and Iraq fell flat on their face because people weren't ready to hear those stories yet. And I don't know that people are ready to hear this story. So it's entirely possible that this film comes and goes with nary a whimper. I can tell you that I will be very excited to see it, and I hope for good things. But I do realize that there is huge potential with this movie to fall completely flat. But I hope not. So we're down to our number one choices. These are the films that we are most excited to see this fall. And yours, I think, is a film that damn near everybody's excited to see this fall. But why don't you dispel with the mystery?
So just I'll do my best. So there was a man, and he's made
it's like a fairy tale.
He's made Reservoir Dogs. He's made Jackie Brown. He's made Pulp Fiction. He's made Kill Bills. He's made Death Proof. And he's made Inglourious Basterds. And he's back with a silent D in Django Unchained, where he's in the West and he's hunting down bad people. And he has Christoph Waltz again, Jamie Foxx. It's going to be amazing, guys. We're going to have a pulpy Western by Quentin Tarantino with a crazy as hell Leonardo DiCaprio.
Can't wait, guys. That was probably the best Christmas gift you could have asked for, isn't it?
I can just hope that it comes out on Christmas Day here. Even though I would probably be in Jamaica having Christmas with my family. So I don't know if I'd get to see it that quickly.
Come on, you can steal away for 2 hours or so.
I don't know. And in Jamaica, it's even less likely that it'll be out on Christmas Day.
that makes me sad. That makes it the worst Christmas ever.
I'll figure it out.
You could say, I gotta hop a plane back to Trinidad. I'll be back in a few hours.
It is only a 2.5 hour flight. Done. So, you know,
no
2.5 hours, 3 hours to the movie, 2.5 hours back. That's a day, you know.
You'll be back in time to open gifts.
Yeah.
There, done. See? I'm with you. I cannot wait for this movie. I'm certainly, you know, this is another one where the trailer dropped and I caved. I watched. I loved. He seems to have found a kindred spirit in Christoph Waltz. If I had a wish, it would be that he is in every movie that Quentin Tarantino does forever. I cannot get the idea that this once was going to be a movie with Will Smith out of my head, because I am curious to no end of what kind of movie that would have been.
I imagine it would have been a very different movie. I mean, I don't think it would have been a very different movie. I don't see Will Smith looking Christoph Waltz dead in the face and calling him Disco Santa Claus.
No, I don't see that either. But I'm with you. Unfortunately, I'm in married life now. I've got to run from house to house on Christmas Day, so I will not be seeing it on Christmas either. My hope is that I can work it in on the 26th. But I'm with you. When I saw that this was coming this Christmas, it immediately rocketed up the list of movies I was really excited about. For a while there, it was looking like a very Leo Christmas, but work is not done on The Great Gatsby, so that's into next year. For a while there, the other 3D film I'm looking forward to.
But isn't it weird how it's now become expected that Quentin Tarantino will finish editing his films on time?
Yeah, well, that was the thing, right? Like he was at Cannes in 2008. I think he was on the jury or something, and he said, "All right, we'll see you guys next year with Inglourious Basterds," which, at the time, that had been a project he'd been knocking around for 10 years. It was one of those scripts that he'd been sitting on forever. So everybody was like, yeah, okay, buddy, whatever. And then he showed up the next year. Here's Inglourious Basterds. And yeah, now after, you know, taking the better part of the decade off, really, because he took his sweet time with from Jackie Brown to Kill Bill. And then after Kill Bill, he did the Grindhouse thing, which didn't really work for him, at least commercially. And you can say what you want artistically. And now all of a sudden, in 2009, and now in 3 years, he's just been cranking them out.
It's the greatest thing in the world. It's Christmas.
Is? It's a Christmas miracle. That's what it is.
Yes, it is.
I see. Well, in North America, that will be out on December 25th. As I said, if you want a very Merry Christmas with Quentin Tarantino, you are covered. And my final one is going to seem like a little bit of a curious choice for sure. But you have your favorite director. I have mine. And my favorite director, as many people know, is Steven Spielberg. And Steven Spielberg has a new film coming out this year. He is doing a biopic on Lincoln.
The Robopocalypse.
Not the Robopocalypse. That's next year. Lincoln fights the robots. We already had him fighting the vampires this year. We're going to put him against the robots. No. It's just called Lincoln. That's it. No versus the vampires. No versus the apocalypse. It stars, of all people, it stars Daniel Day-Lewis as Abraham Lincoln. And if you have seen any of the photographs or the new poster that has been released, he looks amazing as Lincoln. He is not that I was there or anything, but he looks a dead ringer for the man. This is another movie that's got a cast that goes and goes. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's in this too. David Strathairn's in this movie. Sally Field, James Spader, Tommy Lee Jones. And hey, it's a Steven Spielberg movie. I know a lot of people are a little bit wary on him after War Horse, even though I was a fan. Were you a fan? I can't remember.
I loved War Horse. Okay. I was skeptical going in.
Okay.
But it got me.
I see. Oh no, it was, sorry. It was Damien and Douglas who didn't like it.
Yes, they got did it. Not. And they remind me often.
Of it constantly, right. And we know that Corey Attad is a fan, and if you forget, he'll remind you. But I'm a big fan of Spielberg, of course. And I've seen nothing. I've seen like a few still photographs of this film. I've seen the poster, and I know that it focuses on Lincoln's later life, and that's all I need to know. It's something that he's had, kind of like Django Unchained. He's had it in his desk drawer for a long time. For a while there, Liam Neeson was actually supposed to be in this movie. He was supposed to be Lincoln. So when he dropped out and Daniel Day-Lewis came in, I'm excited. I don't think Daniel Day-Lewis has ever worked with Steven Spielberg, has he?
I don't know. Steven Spielberg is a long list.
Well, he is, but that's But that's the funny thing of Daniel Day-Lewis, for how long he's been around, even though he only pops up into movies very sporadically, he only shows up once every few years, he's never worked with Steven Spielberg. So if nothing else, that is the draw. Watch Daniel Day-Lewis work with Steven Spielberg.
And then next year, you can get the robots.
Yes, 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 you can. So that's my number one choice. As I said, the cool thing right now is I've seen next to nothing. This movie comes out in just over like 2.5 months. I know nothing about it, really, and I'm still really jacked. And
so Ryan,
yes.
I'm sorry to tell you, but he dies.
Spoilers, dude. Spoilers. What are you doing to me here? Does he die by vampire?
That's a secret that I won't give away.
Because I don't know, man. I saw a movie earlier this summer that told me that he died by vampire.
I actually didn't even watch that movie. I avoided it.
It's you talking about the FP. You got to see Lincoln Vampire Hunter. It is a glorious mess. It is, but there we go. That is 10. Well, that's 9 films coming out this fall that we are very excited about. Some of them will be both Andrew and I will be talking about in the next few weeks on our sites, because they will be playing the Toronto International Film Festival. Some of them will take us deeper into the winter and into 2013. But we're definitely looking forward to that and to the next few weeks for sure. But for now, that is episode 67 of the Matinee Cast. As mentioned earlier, come back on Monday, September 24th for episode 68, where we will be discussing The Master. Andrew writes gmanreviews.com. I could answer this question myself, but do you have anything coming up?
Well, nothing that's particularly new. I mean, I'm going to be at the Toronto International Film Festival, and everyone who wants to see my reactions, you can go and follow my coverage. I'll be actually doing coverage for Film School Rejects for the International Film Festival. And I guess what I do want to plug for people, if you're watching the newsroom, go over to filmgeekradio.com and listen to my weekly podcast with Andrew Johnson, Navigating the Newsroom.
Andrew Robinson, of course, is still assuming that he's going to get through customs.
Yeah, I assume. Okay. I assume.
What's happening with Unnamed Movie Podcast? Is there something coming up there?
So there should be an episode up on the Thursday of the week this goes up, or the Wednesday, depends. I mean, I'll be flying up to Toronto on the Wednesday, so more than likely the Wednesday. And I don't know. We still haven't decided what's going to happen during the time that I'm in Toronto, but we'll see what goes on.
I must tell you, by the way, listening to the episode where you guys spoke... it was the episode, I can't even remember what the feature review was because that fell out of my head, but you guys spoke for about 15 minutes about The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah,
that episode made me deeply wish that you had done a full episode on The Dark Knight Rises, because those 15 minutes were glorious, and then I just I wanted more of it.
Oh, in that episode, we actually talked about our plans for that fell out, didn't we?
Yes, you did. Yeah, you did.
And that's the big thing. If those plans had happened, you would have gotten yourself a glorious Dark Knight Rises episode.
Goddamn. Well, there we go.
You can blame Damien's niece.
I'll blame Damien's niece. And where can people find you on Twitter?
I'm at Gman Reviews. I generally tweet. You can say hi.
Well done. My site is thematinee.ca. For more podcasting content, you can find back episodes by going to thematinee.ca/podcasting. You can also find them on Blueberry, the iTunes Music Store, and the iPhone podcasting app. They'll give you handy ways to subscribe for free, get alerts when new episodes drop. Feedback on Premium Rush, which I love and Andrew does not. Fall films we might have missed, you can leave them in the comment section of the site. You can email them, ryan@thematinee.ca, or you can also find me on Twitter or Facebook. Any last thoughts, sir?
Look at these thighs. Stop. Look at them, man. it's for the ducks, guys.
You know what?
For the ducks.
Awful big words for a guy who you're going to rely on to tell you which way is north in just a few days.
I can buy a compass. I'm not that blind.
For Andrew, I'm Ryan. We'll see you at the matinee. Find me in the matinee. The dark.